Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. On this week's podcast, we have Timmy's brother, Tommy. How was that for you, Tim?
It was interesting. You know, it was a mixture of a lot of emotions and stuff. You know, he's a very funny character and has lots of energy, doesn't he?
Yeah, you got very emotional.
I did.
That's the most emotional I've ever seen, yeah?
I suppose I got emotional because he lived in a very emotional time in my life when we were in prison and my mother passed away by suicide. You know, we kind of had each other's back at that stage, and it was for me, it was a very, very emotional time, and we were speaking about it, and it just brought me back to that moment, and it just all kind of came back, and
I relived it.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of laughs too.
Oh, yeah.
And had everything. I didn't know it was one of the best podcasts we've done. So it's available now, or it's coming on now. So thanks a million. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like the video and subscribe to the channel. It costs you nothing, but it means a lot to us. And if you want to support us, you can give us the price of a cup of coffee on Patreon. And that helps pay the rent and the production costs and just kind of keep the show on the road. So without further ado, please enjoy the podcast.
Right, welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. I'm Timmy Long, your host today. Joined by my partner in crime, Mr. James Leonard, who is the what do we call you today?
I'm your co-host.
Co-host, okay.
For the evening.
Today, we have a very, very special guest, you know, somebody that grew up both with myself and James, but inside my family home, and it's my brother, Tommy. And before I introduce you to Tommy... I'll leave you tell it himself, won't I, Tom? Right, so it's over to you, Tommy boy.
Hiya, I'm Tommy Long, Timmy's brother. It's good to be here finally.
Great to see you here.
Yeah, nice one.
We see we were all fucked.
But
we were in recovery a good few years while you were still out there.
That's right, yeah.
And I remember we used to go up watching John Paul up in Knocknaheeny Celtic, and you used to be up there, but fucking hell. To see it now from, you know, the progress. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it, what some, recovery has done?
Some difference now, to be fair. I can remember it like it was yesterday, you know.
I know.
Just dying inside by from drugs. And
what's the biggest thing that stands out to you, Tommy, around the change around your thinking since you stopped drinking and drugging?
Oh, it's a million miles apart.
Yeah.
You know, my mind has slowed down, you know. There's not as many crazy thoughts going through my head, you know.
I suppose today you have an awareness that you probably never had before in your life.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
None of us had any awareness previously to where were we going, what were we doing wrong, what our behaviours that, what behaviours we had that weren't helping us in any way in our lives, you know, and I suppose the recovery process is something that it happens in time, you know, and it's like walking up a stairs, you know, they're like different individual steps and each step will give you something. It'll help you to grow in some way, you know, and some of those steps are really, really difficult stuff, you know, and they teach you something, but they get you ready for the next one. So before myself and James will shut up now and we'll give you the mic, so just bring us right back, forget I'm even in the room, or James, bring us right back to how it was growing up for you. And actually, believe it or not, I never even heard your own personal story around how it was for you growing up, you know, even though we lived in the same house, we had completely different lives. So start at the beginning and we'll go from there.
Yeah, we grew up in Alcoholland, you know, obviously myself in the same household, and you know, times were tough back when we were young, in the 80s and early 90s, you know, things were tough. You know, especially single mother with mental health, you know, and young kids seeing that, you know, it was tough. You know, and from a young age, Rob is running from home, you know, because you didn't want to see what was going on with my mum, God love her. You know, she had a tough life with her nerves and, you know.
For anybody that doesn't know, when we say nerves in this country, we mean it's what is it, James?
It's a mental health.
Mental health.
Suffering with their mental health.
Depression.
Yeah. Back in the day, they used to call, if somebody was in a state of depression, they would say it was a nervous breakdown.
That
was the term it was used. It's not really correct, but we still use, like, you know, if you see somebody that's affected mentally, you might say his nerves are at him or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just mental health and depression.
Yeah. So from a young age, seeing all that, you know, we had nothing growing up, you know, it was tough. My mother was a mum and a father when she could be, you know, she done her best, you know, and you know, there was a lot of crime and all that as well around when we were young. Like, I can remember at 5 or 6 years of age being brought home by the guards, you know, at that young, I was introduced to guards for throwing stones at them, man. So I never forget it. A babysitter was watching her, and I pleaded and pleaded for hours, let me out. And I was back to the door within 5 minutes with a guard on my shoulder after throwing stones, you know. So that's where the madness kicked in so early, you know. Then, you know, growing up, horses, everyone knows from the north side, I was mad for horses at a young age. I was nearly killed at 5 years of age by one. I got a kick in the forehead.
Is that where that scar came from in your eyes, though?
Yeah.
I never forget that morning. My mother was walking, the two of us, John Paul was in the buggy, and we were walking across the school field, the primary school. There was no bears there at this stage. Yeah. And we were walking across the field, me and my mum. I think I was on one side of the buggy, John Paul was in it, and he was supposed to be on the other side of the buggy. Next we heard was a thump. Your mum was after going over to try to rub the foal, the mare. There was a mare and foal there, and he tried to rub the mare, and she caught him with a kick, back kick, straight into the forehead here, right here. And that was one of the... Oh, one day I'll never forget.
Yeah, could have been killed stoned if I'm dead.
Yeah, I was lucky if she'd have shot one, I was dead.
Fucking hell.
But, like, that didn't faze me.
No, it didn't give you a fear of horses, like?
It did not give me any fear. I remember 7 and 8 with the older lads out robbing horses, you know. No fear, none whatsoever. You know, and that was all running away from myself. I knew no different, you know. I had no father figure in the family. Yeah. In fact, Timmy was a father figure in years to come, do you get me?
But you know, for the people that don't know where we grew up, explain how close we are to horses and how that would come about.
Well, how close we were to horses. I remember going to school at a very, very young age and jumping up on the horses back in my front garden and jocking to school. Do you know, and that was every morning. You come out, if they weren't in your house, they were in another neighbour's house, do you know? And we bring them on and tie them up by the school, and hopefully they're there.
Yeah.
So you weren't even in school when you were in school because you were worried about the house and someone else wouldn't take him, do you know? That's the way it was.
What about school for you? Primary days?
Do you know something? I was only thinking of that today. It was the worst experience ever.
Why?
Because I got nothing out of it. I was always put in the back of the class. I remember for a solid week on every break, being stuck looking at a wall, like the wall is there to your face.
Yeah.
And if you turned around, boom, turn around. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And if you get locked up today, if you've done that, the kids like.
I know.
Do you know? So school wasn't good. I spent more time in the principal's office than I did in my class. You know, I learnt nothing in school. Mm. You know, I had my own difficulties. I have dyslexia. I definitely had ADHD, but I was never diagnosed. But
we met Mr. O'Donovan recently, didn't we?
Yeah,
we did.
He was my teacher as well.
He was asking for you.
Was he?
Do you know what, Tommy? He hasn't changed a bit.
No. I met him years later with my own son going to school, you know, and he's lovely, man.
He is,
you know. They just didn't know how to deal with us back then.
There was no such thing as ADHD. That was alien language to them.
Yeah. Mm.
They didn't
just
know
bold or brash or...
Disruptive.
Yeah.
And you know what? Even it's the teachers today are so informed around all these different things. Mm. No, not as much as maybe... Yeah, but they are informed, and you know we have a good structure in schools today, and there's some fantastic people working in schools and managing schools as in principals and stuff. So we're very fortunate that maybe 30 years ago the way the system was is completely different. Mm-hmm. No, there is a lot of work to be done to it still.
Yeah,
for everybody to get the education that meets their ability and stuff like that. But, like, I remember growing up, like, you know, we going to hop now from primary school and, you know, sniffing petrol and things like that, you know. But I remember you going to a different school as well.
That was later on.
In secondary school.
Yeah.
So what was the story there?
I went into secondary and I don't know, they couldn't handle me and I wanted to learn and so... And they decided to put me into a different school where it was more manageable and so I could try to learn a bit more, you know? But that was tough then, James. You know? I had a bit of freedom in myself with my mum's situation around the same time, you know? And I was on the hop for 4 or 5 months at a time.
Actually, I have a funny story, kind of funny. It's not funny, but it is funny. Mm. There was a tragedy in the estate in our terrace one time and... the woman died, I think it was through overdose, but they thought that it might be like, it might have been a murder or something like that. So we were all outside the door, you know, and the wall, but there was a photograph on the Echo the next day, Holly Hill murder mystery, but Tommy's face was on the Echo in his uniform. And I remember my mum goes, "Yeah, bastard, you taught me you were in school yesterday," and there he is on the front of the Echo.
There was a few things like that, but I remember on the hop another day by and we were down the weirs, no jumping the gush and first time doing
fields.
It now in the school uniform. Yes, delighted. I said I'd do it one more time before I went home. Straight in I went. All I was worried about was my fags and my pocket. I couldn't care about the uniform. But I got taken that day because I had to go home soaking a few times another time. Me and my cousin and another few, we were out in the Nuns Woods all day. I thought we were away with it. So my mum, after going into the school, we didn't see him around. But all crazy stuff like
Nuns
that.
Nuns Woods is a woods between Shanakeel and the Inniscarra Road.
Yeah.
And Weirs and the Gush is the Lee Fields. The Weir that goes between the Lee Fields and Shanakeel.
Mm.
Sunday as well.
That's what was it like growing up at home? For us, I know.
What's your memory of Timmy?
Growing up.
Do you know what? No. Timmy was. Timmy was like a father figure to us, James. You know? Yeah. We always looked up to him, still do today. Don't
do
tell anyone, but don't tell Timmy. Like,
Do you remember all the wrestling that we used to do as kids?
Do you know what? Now I was listening to the Christy Moore podcast and you were on about wrestling and boxing and this and that. Mm. In my house, if we were watching, you said it, Bruce Lee, Rocky, Craddy Kid, I always knew when it comes to the end of the film, get going. Because Timmy was trying every move on you. I remember one night, Timmy was watching us and there was three of them downstairs. I won't say no names now. There was three of them downstairs and they were watching, I don't know, was it Rocky or something anyway. And Timmy and one of his best friends growing up and one of them is deceased now, he's dead. So the end of the film came, I'm at the top of the stairs asking them all night, can I come down, can I come down? I heard the film ending. You want to hear the roars out of the front room? Oh God, here be one. They broke the poor young fella up between the two of them. It was crazy.
You remember that to me?
I used to love practicing. Do you remember the Karate Kid, the first one, when he had the two hands up
yeah.
and he had to stand
yeah.
in the
and
leg.
He couldn't lift his leg up yeah. past his knee.
But everything at home, I remember. Do you remember? We were always, there's a lot of pictures. We were always there for each other. Do you know what I mean,
yeah,
James?
Yeah,
always,
yeah.
No matter what. Always, the three of us, we were always there for each other, and we always kind of looked out for each other, you know? Even though we were looking out for each other, none of us really knew how to behave and how to really be somebody, how to be a family, because we always dealt with conflict, with violence in my family, always, I was very free with my hands with Tommy, which we'll get onto later on in the story around his addiction years, you know, because I thought by putting my hands in someone and giving him a few clatters or whatever was the best way for him to stop to carry on. Do you know, I didn't know any other way.
There was no guidance growing up, you know, with no father figure, and you're not going to learn all them things, you know. So
when did drugs and alcohol come into your life?
Very young age, James.
How young?
I'd say I was 11.
So primary school?
Yeah, 11. I remember in primary school, one of my friends had a big fighting Irish Celtic jacket.
Yeah.
Three of us could fit into this jacket, that way. And three of us would go in under it at the yard and we'd be smoking fags. And a cloud of smoke would be coming out the top of the jacket. It's crazy stuff. It would have been in secondary. So I was just going into secondary and it was aerosol cans, James.
Mm.
That was my first thing with a cousin of mine. Aerosol cans, boom. And from aerosol cans, every time it always stepped up, I went from aerosol cans to gas bottles, big gas bottles, you know, me and another friend. I remember being at his back door and the gas bottles were out in the back. And we'd be stuck to the two gas bottles.
Mm.
His mother, God rest her soul, would open the door and have to kick the two of us off the gas bottles.
Mm.
We were strung out heavy, you know.
What did sniffing gas do for you?
It took us away from ourselves, you know. Oh, yeah. It took us away from everything. Just, you know, and it was horrible buzz as well.
I know.
Do you know? Yeah. It was a horrible buzz. Petrol, everything. I tried everything. Do you know? And then it went to hash from that. You know, I went to hash and I was grand on the hash, getting our £10 deals about that length.
Do you remember years ago when we, myself, Noah and John Paul, because we'd be a bit younger than you.
Yeah.
Myself, Noah, John Paul, Jimmy, Patrick, Gail, Leanna. You know, if we scrape up the few quid for the £5 deal, we'd be tossing in to see who's going to go up to the bungalows for it, because you'd be ashamed at the fiver and change, you know? But they were innocent days, weren't they?
Part of growing up, like.
But that was the next step to the harder ones.
Yeah.
I remember you not really as a hash man.
No.
But you started drinking then.
I was smoking it for a good while, but I was just smoking hash. I wasn't drinking with it.
Yeah.
And when I drank with it then, I just couldn't.
I know. I
was ghost. Mm. I was green arrows and whiteies. and I'd be in bed, I'll never again do it. Please, God, stop.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Oh, it was the worst thing ever.
There's not mercy for after about 7 or 8 bottles and you're nice, no mellow.
Yeah, and you
and
take it.
Two drags of the joint and you're spinners.
You're against the wall. You don't know if you're coming or going. Yeah.
It's horrible.
And so it didn't mix for me, so I had to give up one. So then it was drink. It was game over then.
Mm.
It was game over. I started getting into trouble, you know. I was a pure eater on drink, pure stupid, you know. Could never stop, as you know. Last one to go home, that kind of stuff, you know.
Ecstasy became a big thing then,
didn't it? Ecstasy were a big thing in my life.
Do you know what? The ecstasy years for us all.
And I can tell you this now. I can tell you this now about it. They were the best days of my life.
I know. They were mad days, weren't they?
You know, like, for us growing up, emotions were a big thing.
Yeah.
You'd never see one of us cry. We could have been leg hanging off and we wouldn't cry or show emotions to anyone. It was just, there was a while there with that.
Yeah.
But when you took an ecstasy,
be all hugs and
your host would be in your room, the room with you, and you'd love him.
Yeah.
And you could have, yesterday, you could have been killing him.
Yeah.
You know, it was, that's the way it was, you know. Even if you were arguing with someone and you two of you were on ecstasy, that argument is gone.
Yeah.
You know? You know,
with the ecstasy as well, it was like something to get through the week to look forward to.
Oh, I couldn't hear a song on a Friday coming home. Well, I was plastering at the time. And I turned on the radio. A song would set me off. I get the butterflies up. Oh, I'm going on. I'm going buzzing. I'd be on to the phone, little Nokia 3210. Hello, what's the crack? That was it, by gone. You see me Sunday.
Yeah.
I take them on a Monday, Sunday I'd be home.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. You were there.
I know.
You were there.
I know, but there's a lot of mad stuff happens as well, though, when you're out in the vendors like that. And then you start getting into trouble and start going to court, and that's not so much fun. But I think they were kind of half innocent days, but then when the tablets started coming in, it was madness then.
Yeah.
And you were always, like, we could take 10, 20 tablets. You take one and you go loopy.
That was one thing with me. I could not take tablets. I could not. I'm capable of doing anything just on drink.
Yeah.
But give me a tablet, two horns come out, my whole features change.
We used to have the tablets, so we would be taking them on the sly. Not on the meanness. You know, you end up minding them.
You couldn't give him nothing. Yeah. I know. Actually, listen, I know what way he was. Yeah.
I was actually thinking of that today. I was saying, all about the tablets, I was saying.
Yeah.
And the boys used to have pockets of them, but I know you wasn't getting none.
Yeah.
But if we had a photograph now, Tommy, of the times that you did take them here, people would really understand why you were never given tablets.
Yeah, like. Definitely. Like, it was crazy.
Just drive you mad, didn't it?
Oh, mental. Yeah. Mental, capable of anything. I often woke up in the gas station by full of piss.
Mm.
How the fuck?
What? I know.
And drunk my famous words to you say in the gas station. Do you want to know who's with you? Because that's all I used to say. Hello, what am I in here for? And then, who's with me?
Yeah.
Do you know, it was fucking hell. Yeah. And that was
all
every
the time,
weekend.
Tommy.
Every weekend. Yeah. Do you know what a girl said to me one time? He says, I'm getting some overtime out of you.
Mm.
He says, the money I'm making off you is no man's business.
Mm.
I said, well, leave me alone, so, will
I? I remember then you went through a period there, I think, when we were kind of drinking, taking tablets nearly every day. But there was a period of time then where you were working as well and you seemed to kind of be a bit more sensible.
Yeah.
More plastering. We'd had a drink, you know, during the week and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think it was just before the gear came in, just before the heroin came in.
All right. I used to work. I was a good fella to get up for work.
Yeah.
I often went into work still drunk, James.
Mm.
You know, and my bosses would know it, and they'd leave me alone because they knew I'd come in and I'd graft away. You know, they used to give me any shit. I often had the boss say, Tommy, stay there for a couple of hours, try to get asleep and come up when you feel better. You know, because I'd go in and I would graft away, and then I'd go home that night and get my shower, my dinner, straight to the office, you know, up and rob every wheelie bin in our colour.
I know.
And I just want to say sorry for all that.
I know. So what you're doing now is you're trying to make sure that that don't happen for the next person.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Try to show people the right way. But can you remember the time where before the gear came in, we used to be up in Harryville, Thirsty Thursday, drinking.
I'll never forget
that. But they were good days, weren't they?
They were the best days.
When the tin foil came in with the gear, it ruined everything.
And the way that happened, every Thursday we were all working, we were all doing well. We'd meet up on a Thursday, we'd have a few cans. Brilliant. Have a great night, the slagging, the banter. You know, it was powerful. And then there was two dropping off. You take no notice of two, then the next week there's another two, and it was like that every week. Two gone, two gone, two gone. You were saying, I had a gun, and I knew nothing. You might have known, but I knew nothing. And then 1 week, where are they? They're smoking heroin. What? And I know more, I won't do that anyway.
But you know when they came in, it was sneaky enough when they came in.
Before I knew it, I was on it. I was one of the last people to go on it. Oh, there's 20 of us.
Yeah. But even like at the end of the night when you're half drunk, then it's like go and get a bag and smoke in the tin foil. After a while then it was like straight to the tin foil, there was no more cans. And
the
group we had and the crack and the banter was gone.
Yeah.
And then it was like people being snaky and...
Like I remember at the start, remember we used to be in the Arctic lorry.
Yeah, down the
10, 15 of us. You'd have your bag, you'd have your tray, you'd goof off, your tray's in front of you, no one would touch it. And you wake up a couple of hours later, you'd smoke it again and you're gone for another couple of hours, and that's the way it was.
Yeah.
But that changed rapid then, it got a hold of us, we were waking up sick, man.
Horrible, wasn't it?
How come you're not at work? I have the flu. You haven't. I may never forget it. Someone turned around and said, "I have the flu." You haven't the flu at all, but
I remember Tommy. A lot of people at this stage know I was involved in drugs myself at this time, and I always looked at heroin as a different drug because of my own reasons when I was in treatment, and I see what heroin done to people. You know, I was a young lad in France, and people coming in from Italy and Spain completely destroyed from heroin and being given heroin on their journey from, say, Spain or Portugal or France, to the treatment centre. And it frightened the life out of me. And that's why I never went near it. And I always looked at heroin as a really, really nasty drug because of that. And that's why I didn't go near it. But I remember back in the day, when the heroin did come into the city, there was a few people after pulling me and saying to me, "I'm sure your brothers are on heroin." I was nearly arguing a few times with people. "Nah, they're not that fucking stupid. No, they wouldn't go near that." I'd tell, "All right, Timmy, no hassle." And one day then someone said to me, and I trusted them, someone I knew really closely, and they said to me, "Your brothers are smoking here." I said, "They're fucking not." He says, "I swear on my mother's soul, your two brothers are smoking gear." Right? And he took it on board and I pulled the two of you and I asked you. And he swore down and everything that you want. But I remember walking in home one day and I walked in and I said, my mother was in the kitchen and I saw the boys. She says, "They're in there." I says, okay. She says, "I'm sure they were smoking weed or hash or whatever." And I went in and I looked at the two of you in the couch and the two of you were goofing off. I knew nothing about heroin. And I said, "What the fuck is wrong with the two of you?" And you kind of went like that and you looked at John Paul and he's smoking weed down there. And I said, I walked out of the room and I left you off. The two of your eyes were pinned into your skulls And then it was after that then.
You were probably in denial to me, not wanting to confront reality because it was such
I knew the damage that
they had
that stuff
an awful name, like,
you know.
Yeah.
No,
we had an awful name at the time as well.
Yeah definitely.
I was no better than anybody, if anything. I was probably fucking worse because of what I was doing myself, involved in drugs, you know what I mean? And I was never anybody to call anybody else. But it was because it was so close and personal to me.
Yeah.
The two of you. And I knew the devastation that drug caused to people because of my experience as a young lad. It really fucking caused a lot of issues within our family, which happened in later on in years, when the two of you were strung out, and we won't get into that stuff because it's personal stuff.
Yeah.
It destroyed absolutely everything. We went from a really, really close net, the three of us, to really kind of having nothing to do. The trust was being broke. The trust was being broke. The things that were happening, it kind of really took us apart, didn't it? Mm. No, it's only now, really, that.
I think even though you were involved in drugs too, it's a completely different drug, a completely different lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like the shame as well. You don't want nobody to know, especially your older brother.
Yeah.
And especially when people hear heroin, they just hear needles. That's, you know, like, thank God it was a lot of tinfoil I used to use, you know. Yeah. I did bang up.
Later on.
Later. I only banged up four times. And, you know, and it's genuine, like, and I wanted to get stoned, James. It was not to get stoned, it was to end it all, because I had enough. I was on death's door from it. It ruined me. I couldn't even look at myself. So I was going around about 7 or 8 stone grey in the face. So I was in tatters from it.
What was the turning point?
So
you were two brothers in recovery when you were still strong.
Like, right, I remember, as you said there ago, I was a few years after all the vegan getting clean.
Yeah.
I remember passing me and you up the lane and you all doing well, John Paul, Caelum, Sean, all of you. And I remember coming across by the church and spotting me and you know, up, I always had the hood up because you know, and passing me and hoping you didn't call me, draw, you know, and next minute you spot me, but I wasn't stopping, like, I couldn't stop, you know, so I shot on. And I heard you roaring for me, and I just kept going, you know, because I was ashamed of my life. I was low at that time, though, as well. And I remember walking over the road, having a little whinge to myself and saying, fucking hell, there's definitely something wrong with me.
It's a lonely place to be.
Yeah, right? But I think there's definitely something wrong with me.
Do you know, as well, like, Tommy, even to get to that point, like, there was, and I'll share this because I think it's important because of I remember you were in and out of prison as well a lot, and that was the night, that was the best time for me, ma'am, and for me, because we didn't have to worry about the two of you. But I remember one point, things were so bad for you, and I knew there was a bench warrant out for you at the time. And I went off to the house to catch you, like, and you were doing your thing. Right? I looked in the window, you were doing your thing, whatever you do.
That's right, yeah.
And I just went in and grabbed you and threw you into the car. And they brought you down to the guard station. Because I knew that there was a warrant out for your arrest. And I knew that they'd take in. Because we were so worried of you. I was getting phone calls every day by different people telling me, Timmy, Tommy's not looking well at all. Like,
yeah.
I don't, you know, and I'd see you and you'd be hiding from me. You'd be fucking dodging me constantly. You'd be knowing when I'm not at home in my mother's house so you could call, you know, and it all came to an end. You know, it was so bad and you were so thin that it wasn't, going over and giving you a few clatters wasn't an option. It was just grabbing you and bringing you down there. And my hope was that they'd bring you in and they'd keep you inside in the prison to get you sober and keep you, you know, get you back fresh, get you away from the drugs. And I remember I went up and they said to me, Mom, I says, I'm just have to bring them down. And like everything in me didn't want to do this, Tommy. You know, because that's not something that we do, like. But
desperation.
My mother was fucking, my mother at home was distraught. You know, we were all worried sick, and I went over to her and I says, I'm after bringing him out to the, I went over and I called him and I brought him out to the guards. And they're after taking him in because there's a warrant out for his arrest. He said, I didn't know what else to do. You know, I don't want to put my hands in him because that's how we dealt with stuff. And I remember he getting back out the next day. I was just devastated. It was like, And I remember the same time, we were constantly just waiting for a phone call or a knock on the door.
I actually remember getting a phone call off of him one time. And he says, Tommy, I have to ring. I just have to get this off my chest. He goes, I'm after accepting it. And I'm like, you're after accepting what? I'm on the other end of the line now in tatters. He goes, I'm after accepting that I'm going to get a phone call that you're dead. He says, I've accepted it. I'm like, you know what I mean, knowing the depths of it. I'm just thinking, this fucker, you know. But today, now, I know where he was at, you know. I know where he was at, you know, because something similar was like that with me a few months ago, you know, with someone else.
You were in the Midlands prison together.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in St. Francis Farm Treatment Centre, remember we were out to each other for a few weeks there?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were strung out up there though, weren't you?
I think I was worse up there.
What was it like?
Was here.
What was it like sharing the landing with him, Ian, that?
Oh, I was...
Because you were in early recovery that
time. Early recovery, I was half...
I'll tell you a story, you know, about the Midlands, right? Because when Christy Moore was on and your man's learning guitars and learning the song jams, right? So I was a cleaner on the land than he was. So my cell opened at 8 o'clock and curled up in the bed. Next minute, here's your man shaking me. Get up. What's wrong? Come over to my cell, quick, he says. I jumps out of the bed like, what's wrong? Don't turn on me clothes and what have you. Walks over across into the cell. Here's a man sitting down with a kid here. Listen to me singing a song. I pushed out the door. Like, oh yeah, but it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Here's your man. What's wrong to you like?
Yeah. Tommy was always the first person to get if I'd learned a new song, and I wrote a few songs as well.
Yeah.
Tommy was
always. Tommy was always. Tommy, come over and have a listen.
He could
have
waited until 12 o'clock in the day, but no, 8 o'clock.
He was up all night. He couldn't wait for the door to open.
But going back to what you were saying there about the recovery process, you know, I remember Tommy. And he'll give his version of it. You know, I'll just get the story going. I remember Tommy was in Portlaoise. I was in the Midlands and John Paul was below in Cork prison at the same time, and I remember him just coming over. He were only over for a week, just to stay in the Midlands.
I was coming over for a week visiting,
And
I didn't know they did that.
They did.
They're due for family.
I could have gone back in the week, like, but I ended up kind of saying, right, I'll hang on a while, because when I was going, they wouldn't keep my cell in the Portlaoise.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fresh,
if they kept my cell, I would have went back, but they didn't. And then I said I'd stay, then drawn everything back over, going to a different land and then this and that. So then I stayed, and so then a month later, my mother committed suicide.
What was that like for you that time?
It was tough, James. But
were you strung out at that time?
I wasn't strung out. I wasn't strung out, but I was dipping and dabbling, you know. I never forget it, but I never forget it. An officer, this is where my head was at. An officer opened my cell and says, Thomas, come out there, the chief wants you. I says, Tom, I'm getting the job that I was looking for. And he goes, come off to Timmy's cell. And I walked over, and I opened the door, I seen him in tatters crying, and I just goes, I kind of knew straight away, James, and I, whoa. And they said, stay there. And I says, no, I'll go back to my own cell, you know. And I did, but it was tough. I went off the rails and I says, Dave. And then, you know, we got down to the funeral and seen my man for a few hours. We didn't get to the funeral to see her lay to rest. And when I got back, by I was there saying, they wouldn't do that for me, no, I'm doing nothing for them. Mm. You know, and then I just went head for leather on drugs, and I was badly strung out in there. Mm. I was heavily, and I was up to everything.
Do you know, when at that time, Timmy, you're grieving for your mum inside, are you worried about your brother then as well? Like, are you detached from it, or how are you?
I was dealing with my own stuff, you know, because I had a lot of regret as well, because myself and my mother didn't have too much of a relationship at the time, and I was fortunate that the night before she took her life, it was her birthday. It was her birthday on the 2nd, and she took her life on the 3rd, and she'd rang Tommy, and Tommy was talking to her inside in the class office on the landing, and I was just mattered to be passing the landing at that stage, And Tommy calls me, he says, my mum's on the phone, I go over and say hello to her. You know, my mum, I see what was after happening was my mum was, me and my mum, we were going through our own stuff, you know, and she said she was seeing a counsellor, and I was seeing a counsellor as well, and I was dealing with a lot of different issues, you know, and I wasn't in a great place, to be honest with you, you know, and I spoke to her on the phone, and you know, I said, mum, how are you getting on? And getting emotional.
Yeah. Take your time.
Right, I says, how are you getting on? She says, I've seen the counsellor. And that was a big deal for me.
Yeah.
You know, but
you were both on your healing journeys, like.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Throw us over the box of tissues there, Sean.
I didn't. Sorry, lads.
Oh, boy.
Find them.
I didn't realise that it was going to be the fucking last day we'd hear, you know, but because of the guilt and stuff I had from not having a relationship with her at the time, I wasn't able for it because I was in a bad way. But my own mental health, I was destroyed, you know. But
at least you got to stay high, Twalik.
It was good to have him on the landing, you know. He, even though he was breaking my heart half of the time, I was running around the landing, like, trying to chase him to get him up to AA and fucking to get him up to the school, to get him off the landings and stuff, you know. It was a difficult process, you know. But, like, everybody loved him. I knew there was never going to fucking be anybody go near him or anything like that, but he was loved, you know. He got on with everybody, and we were on a really, it was a mad landing, how we got it. But we got on with all the lads. I was doing my own thing, you know, and there was one thing that always kind of always stood to me, and it was told to me inside me before I went into prison, and it was like, Timmy, just always remember one thing, and they said, people, places, and things, you know. And I didn't understand what that meant, people, places, and things. And they said to me, like, people, stay away from people from your past. Stay away from people who are caught up in addiction and stuff like that. You know, places, stay away from pubs, you know. And things, stay away from things that will get you back into the same kind of bother, you know, behaviours and stuff. And that's what I lived by. Every single day I'd say, people, places, things, people, places, things, people. And, like, for me, that was a big deal because, like, I had Tommy 3 cells down on the landing for me, and it was like I had to stay away from my own brother because of him dealing with his own shit, you know, in addiction. And it was difficult, and it was a lonely, lonely fucking place, to be honest with you, but it was the best place for me at the time, you know, and even for him, you know, like, I was offered an open prison after fucking 12 months or whatever, and I declined because I needed to be there because I was getting a lot of help off the psychologist on the prison, the counselling. I was doing my junior cert in the school, a lot of personal development groups, you know, and I was in the right place at that time, you know. But it was tough for me. It was tough on the landing, you know, and then John Paul came up. John Paul, the three of us were on the same landing then, you know, but I kind of kept my distance from the boys. I knew what was going on, but I didn't want to be in their faces fucking giving them shit, you know what I mean?
Well, people, places, and things, like, just happened to be your family members were some of the people that were the trigger in your life. And that's a lot of people that be listening and watching can relate with that.
Yeah.
How do you, like, people, place, and things, relapse prevention, that's the basics of it. But it's very hard when it's your family is the people and your house might be the place. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a very difficult
part of prison. That happens a lot. Well,
but you know, it was tough. It was tough. Like, as because you're a cleaner then on the landing, you know, and I was a cleaner and I wasn't using drugs, right? But a fella might call and slip something underneath the door and tell you to drop it to another cell. And he's like, fuck, hell, that's completely against. But if you don't do that, then like, you'll be getting yourself into trouble in the cell, in the prison. So, you know, there was things like that, you know, but I just done what I had to do, you know what I mean? And get through it, like, and...
So, do you know, things, obviously, your mother passed away, you're in and out of prison, the addiction is getting worse. How did you manage to get into recovery?
It was all around me, James. It was all around me. My family, my friends, everyone. I was like a lone soldier by on my own, you know, isolated, everything. And it was just hitting rock bottom, James, but hitting rock bottom. Things were, I'll never forget it, but it was around the Christmas, yeah? And me and another fella, we were staying in the Orange, yeah? As you get go in the gates there, there's a little, like a security hut, but it's an old building.
Yeah.
So we were in there, and around the Christmas by and in tatters. I remember, as you know me, I'd always have me good clothes on for Christmas Day and what have you. But I was in there, nowhere to go, after pushing everyone around me that loved me away. Pushed them all away, but they couldn't deal with me no more. And I remember being in there, boy, and I never in my life felt so lonely. So lonely, boy, I just wanted to die. And that's where it comes to with the needles. I remember taking a few tablets, and a lot of fellas would have been dread of him. And I tell them, put it in, wanting to go over, wanting to die. That's where it was. And I remember when he put it into my hand and he was, no, I'd be fucking killed. No, fucking do it. And he done it and I'm there like that. Am I going over now? Yeah. Will I go over now? Nothing happened. And another fella came up and I got him to do the exact same. That was two of my first times, Do it. Nothing happened. And then I done it once or twice after that. Similar things, wanting to go over, wanting to die. And I had enough, boy. I couldn't keep on. And I couldn't take my own life because I was afraid of it. I prayed not to wake up the next morning, I don't know how many nights, praying to go to sleep and die. And it was game over. And I was in Arbor House, I was on methadone, and I went from Arbor House to Blackpool, and then I went from Blackpool to George O'Mahony's surgery, and I had a doctor up there, and I says, look, I want to get into treatment. Give me your lines. I'll ring them with you. Rang Francis Pham, and rang her with me, give me four your lines, and we'll have you in as soon as. I actually done it that time. I'd done it by previous, before that, I tried to get in there as well, James. And I'd done the O-rings, done everything. They rang me and said, you're going in Sunday. I couldn't handle it, James. What was the first thing I went to? I went away and used. I rang them back, I'm after using. I couldn't. I wasn't ready. I said, but I didn't use heroin, I'm after taking tablets. We'll have to put you back for 2 weeks. That was back then. But that went on for a year and a half on then, and then all the Christmas stuff came up and so it was after that I said, that's it, just came over.
I remember you rang me a few days before you were out to go in, and if you'd asked me straight up would I have believed you would have sustained it, no, because of you had the opportunity before and you didn't take it.
Yeah.
And it was like, are you going to self-sabotage yourself? Are you going to, you have an opportunity here now, are you going to use? So
I'd tell you now how hard it
took
was.
Your chance.
How hard it was for me to get into treatment. I couldn't get a day clean, Jeff. I could not get a day clean. You know yourself, you've been there, especially around heroin. And I could not get a day clean. And I was given bogey orange, you know. But that's the only way. And I was drawn the way you'd be very clever in ways to get around things on heroin. You'd be professional. Yeah. So I bought myself a mug, the coffee mugs, and I'd have it with pipe and water. So by the time I get from Nahini down, I'd have the piss inside in that.
Keep it warm.
Keep it warm, yeah. And I'd go down. And just before I go in, I'd be taking out the urine. I'm sure there was times she was burning my hands and all by taking the urine. It was that hot. So it was
a bottle of tea.
And I kind of think she knew I needed it, but I just could not get clean by and I remember giving the phone and she goes, congratulations. Congratulations. We'll give them that now and we'll get the thing. And I used up to the minute, James. Used heroin up to the minute that I knew I got the phone call that I had a week
to get it out of your
system. To get it out of my system. And what I had to do was get tablets for the whole week. I was on my own medication to go in there, but I just bought every tablet I could to take me away from the heroin.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so out of it all week that no one thought I was going to make it. No one thought I was going to go. I'm out of my head now, round the place, getting arrested the night before I went in. I remember going into the gas station after doing something in town and getting arrested. And they brought me up and saying, please don't lock me up. I'm going to treatment in the morning. They were probably saying, you heard this fella? You're out of his fucking head. But they left me out. And one of our friends, Sean, I was outside Sean's at 7 o'clock the next morning, out of me natural mind on tablets. Out of it. And he goes, Tommy, but God, loom. You all right? I was on death's door. He goes, am I wasting my time going up here? I says, I'm telling you now, there's no heroin in me. It's all tablets.
Everything else but it.
Everything else but. And he goes, right, come on. I went into the back of his car, but I was in the back, curled up in the back seat. And up the road.
That was the start of it.
That was the start of it, boy. That was the start of it. I went in, and it didn't stop there for me. Didn't stop. I went in there. I had 2 days left in one house to go to the next house.
The detox
into the
treatment centre.
Yeah, So drugs came in. I had 2 days to graduate out of here. And I never forget it. A girl come up to me. She goes, Tommy, I'm going to have to get in a few seats. The girl knew me from back down here. And I goes, what are they? Zimmer's torn, says, I didn't want to come up in your urine. Give me a few of them. I won't, she says. You'll get the whole place caught. No. She knew me. Will you stop? I said, well, look, I'll tell you what to do. But she didn't know how many I could take. She said, give me three. All right, so here's three. 8 o'clock at wind down, I had the whole house caught. I was singing songs and fucking and but
you know, back in the day when we were taking tablets, no, we'd be taking raw hypnol, we used to call them purple hearts.
Yeah.
We could take 10 of them. We give Tommy a half one. They were like a wonder heart, we used to call them. They used to do wonders for you.
I remember one time going up along the lane and I crunching my head off of the wall. I could not get away from the wall, but
I know.
The boy says he's messing. How could you be messing? Falling into the dash wall.
Yeah.
Want to be something seriously, aren't you?
But I remember when you finished, I remember having a chat with Timmy around that time when you come away from St. Francis Farm after the detox and you didn't do the treatment side of it. I huge concerns
I tell you now.
About, you know, because people usually kind of go back.
The next day after using, the heroin came into the house. I used that too. You know me, I'm fucking...
Yeah.
I was over in the house that they're all doing well with 7, 5 and 6 months. And I asked them for tin foil to make a cake at 10 o'clock at night. Do you know what I mean? That's how fucking crazy it was. But that was grand anyway. Next morning, we all knew there was something up. Here I am drinking gallons of water, trying to piss out everything out of me because I was after using heroin, and that was it. I was caught. Tell us who brought in the drugs. I couldn't do it. I says, it is not in me to do it. I can't. I wasn't reared up like that. No, I can't. So he goes, you'll have to go home. I says, look, ring me a taxi. So I ended up going home and I got 3 bags of heroin, gents. I smoked the 3 of them. And I didn't get stoned at them. Mm. It was, I think it's a blessing today that I can speak about that. I did not get a bang at them. All I got was shame, guilt, Oh, it was eating me up inside. The next day then Timmy rang me and says, what are you up to? He says, come down with me there for 2 weeks. I did. And he brought me on to work with him every day. I was in tatters. My legs, I was off methadone a week. Mm. I was in the line for a disaster. I was saying to myself, oh God. But he brought me to work, and he rang your cousin Caleb and said, will you take Tommy to the meeting? He goes, I will. I never forget it. It was a Thursday night newcomers meeting. I went in with Caleb.
Livorna.
Yeah, Livorna. Great meeting it was. So I shared. I'm out of treatment. Ross said, what's going on? And the feedback back. I've been in meetings before just to get people off me back or going out of the cold and have a goof, to get me?
Yeah.
So I was in there by and I was listening by and drawing the feedback by and I can't explain it, not even to this day, but something alighted it inside me. But, and I was saying, I want more of that. Yeah. I never forget it. It sunk into me. Keep coming back, keep coming back. Simple. I says, the only thing, if I only take anything out of this place tonight, if I take anything out of this thing tonight, I'll keep coming back.
Yeah.
And I did.
How many years now?
I'm over 4.5 years now, boy. And then when Miss Alan, my buddy, is sitting down there by me rock.
Why, Alan?
Alan, boy, we connected, boy. We got a bond. We went to meetings every night, 15 months solid, every night, sometimes 2 a day. No, neither of them, James. I was hungry, boy. Hungry for meetings, boy. I did not want to go back to where I was. I couldn't. It was game over. So I just be at new meetings, going to conventions. I remember going to my first convention 8 or 9 days clean. So I never forget it.
I
went up to the toilet, right? And came back down and the DJ and the dance floor was full. And I looked in and I said, fucking hell, they are twisted in there. All blood sober. Sure, I was up on top of the stage then with the tops off. Yup. Do you know what I mean? And I just got hungry for it, James. I had enough of it. So.
And you got stuck into penny dinners as well?
Yeah, we
all. Volunteering.
Then lockdown came down. We done volunteering. I never forget it, right? At the time, it was very, very cold. And Katrina had a couple of homeless people in there that were in the depths of addiction, in there out of the cold, you know. And I remember walking in there one day and seeing them. And I was saying, that's sad, like, you know, very sad. I was there.
Yeah.
I was there. And I said to Katrina, I'd love to start a meeting for them. She goes, I think it'd be a great thing. She goes, go on, go over Tuesday night, said it to Alan and another one or two. And we did. We got on it and Do you know the way you're sharing in a meeting and you're doing the chair, you can't speak till the chairperson is finished. Yeah. So whoever was doing the chair, it was tough. We'd let them speak while you're doing the chair because they'd forget by the time you're finished what they wanted to say. So it was not tough like that, but we did. And that was grand anyway. The weather got better. We kept the meeting going. I remember 6 months later, opening the door, and there was a fella, but strong as a horse, shining. I was like, where were you? He goes, I'm only out of treatment, Tommy. Same fella was around the streets now, like.
Yeah.
He says, I'm only out of treatment. He says, you used to pass me in town, Alan Taylor. You used to pass me. You were the only people in town that would stop me and say, how am I feeling? Are you good? He said, you inspired me. He said, he went down to have a treatment by and 6 months clean. Same young fella's up the country now.
Yeah.
Two new babies, flying it, lovely partner, working.
Stay off for everybody, like.
I was like, whoa. And he came from hardcore streets, like.
Mm.
You know?
Tell us about the stuff you did during lockdown with Penny Dinners.
Yeah, and then a group of us there, you know, the homeless again, they were left on their jack. Yeah. When COVID hit, everyone ran for the hills, no one knew nothing, what was going happening. Yeah. A lot of people thought it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
But the homeless were still there. They had nowhere to go. No one was taking them in. And Penny Dinners would start going out in the vans and giving them food. So we were going, walking around home, giving them food. And which one of us came up with an idea and said, wouldn't it be faster if we had bikes?
Mm.
So, right. Great idea. Katrina went away and got bikes. Some of us had bikes. And we all into town. Every night we'd be down alleyways, flying all over the Cork City, and feeding people. And the bond we got with them, the bond we got with them, just, we could be the only people they meet that day.
Yeah.
And having a chat and asked them, what did they need? Sleeping, making food, socks, jocks, hats, the works. It was powerful.
It's a good example of, like, in recovery, you only keep what you have by giving it again.
Yeah, 100%. Now,
we have a few minutes left, so we'll finish it up with a few funny stories. But
I have a funny story for you. Right, come on.
Do you remember the time me and you got out of Cork prison the same time? And we went down to Timmy's gaff.
Oh, God.
Do you remember that, Timmy? Timmy the fridge full of drink and a mountain of coke.
Yeah, that way.
And then he got a paranoid one, then he ran us.
Yeah, he gave us €50 each as well. I rang him, where are you? I'm down home, come down. Ah, oh, stop. Oh, that was a crazy night after. I won't even go into that.
I went to the psychosis that week.
Yeah.
I completely lost my head. I lost
James,
my mind.
James, as you ran about lockdown, yeah? I was in town, because I live in town now, I was in town and there was guards outside the courthouse. Guard, you know him very well yourself. And he says, come here, Jesus, you're fucking flying it, you're doing well, boy, keep up. When are you going on the Tunaries?
I said,
no, for a long time yet. He goes, fuck it, you should go on. You've some stories, he says. He says, tell him about the handcuffs. I won't say his name, but so I was there one night, it was up now, Cullen. And big row between the three terraces, and we were up scrapping up and down. I walked up with my mother that time, and the Jeep pulled in. Next minute, the two of them jumped out of the Jeep, grabbed me.
The girl, the Jeep.
Two girls jumped out and grabbed me, threw me into the Jeep. My mother saying, he done nothing, he's with me, fucking. So that was grand. So there was so much commotion, they ran to get more. So then I have the handcuffs on me behind my back and I popped the door, it opened. I was gone. Gone. So I ran down home and said, fuck, this is the first place I'm going to go. Then I ran out the terrace, up the road, knocked at another friend's door.
Hands behind your back.
Hand behind my back. Who's in the gaff? Only Timmy fast asleep. He comes into the gaff anyway with the handcuffs on, wakes him up, what's happening? He spots the handcuffs, tried to dig the head off me. I had to run out of that gaff. So I went down to another gaff anyway, and one of the boys cut him off with the bolt cutters. And I should have kept them. I should have kept them for the sort of, yeah. But that was grand, eh? Two nights later, they caught me. I was out. I was after swallowing 2 weeks to see tablets. I was out in the south side. Just jumped into the taxi, right? So next minute, Speedy, paddy wagon, up there, whoa, taken. So come out, what's your name? John Paul Long, I says. Right, he says, John Paul, stand there. So I ain't there, no. Feel the rushes coming on with the ease, you know what I mean? And what's your name? The two boys give their names, go on away. Thomas, get in there, you was into the back of the paddy wagon. So that was grand, I ain't in the back of the paddy wagon being fired wrong coming up in these ease. So
ask the shade, turn up the Jones.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So that was grand up into ground. They were on swingy chairs like this and throw where they'd be taking your name. Next minute, I don't know his name, but remember the shade with the bark mark?
Yeah,
him. So that was grand, he swung around the chair. Look who it is, he says. Mr. Long, and flew off to me on the chair. He goes, I tell you one thing, I coming up now, lifting. And he says, I tell you one thing, he says, you're a fast runner with handcuffs. Me twisted. You want to see me with them off? Boom! Wind in me, I put it off. Yeah, that was. And the girl that was watching the camera actually got fired in the.
Where?
Yeah. He'd a few incidents like that, I heard.
Which you heard at that, around there, Colin, at that time? Some of the girls were more sensible than the others.
Yeah,
some girls, you know, if we were up in Hogan's Lane or Nash's or down to St. Anne's drinking, they'd have you off.
Yeah.
But then others then would come down acting the kind of blackguard, and then there'd be a lot of trouble come over.
Yeah, and the same guard that said that to me now about the handcuffs, he'd me in court every second week, definitely. And then, you know, a promotion he got out of me, I'm sure.
Yeah, do you know what, though? I suppose, back then, if they were just probably doing their jobs, and we were absolutely a nuisance to the areas we were living in.
I'm not that bad.
But I suppose when you look back at it too, every time that you probably did go into prison because of charges too,
that potentially saved
your life.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and a lot of people who are probably listening to this and would have a similar background to all of us here.
But when you think about the guards as well, every time I went in court, I got caught banged to rights. There was never a defence. Like, we were doing stuff there, like, you know, you can imagine, like, an air calling is a quiet place now in compared to back then.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what it must have been like for the neighbours? I tell you a funny one with the neighbours. Do you remember the time where Damien stole the fella from Apple's bike out of the garage?
I was thinking of that the other day.
So, Damien was another, we won't say any second name, no, but Damien was half mad on the drink.
Mad thing, yeah.
Took your man's bike, any outside the garage. But on the foreign bikes, the back brakes is on the right. So I was coming down the lane, by the primary school.
We were waiting on the bike for hours. The bike was robbed by the garage, right?
A motorbike?
No, a push bike. What happened,
right?
I'll tell you the whole story and we finish on that. We were up in the basketball courts. I come and says to one of the boys, I have to cycle to Bishopstown for work. I have to get a bike. So we're all there getting away, and next minute this fella flies and passes and turns into the garage. A decent bike. So one of the boys ran down into the garage, took the bike, shot up the terrace, your man's bike was gone, parked it up behind the houses. So that was ran down there. James says, I'm going up along, I'll be back again. So he says, grab the bike when you're coming down. That's man, then James went on about his business. He should have been 15 minutes, half an hour at most. About an hour and a half later, there's no sign of James. So we're asking everyone, anyone see James? James comes back a half an hour and a half later. Broke up. Where were you? He says, I was coming down the lane on the bike. I pulled the back brakes and it went all over the handlebar.
I was
knocked out for 45 minutes up the lane. Yep. Oh. Someone came along and woke me up.
Oh, who came along? Pat Lanigan and another one of them with the messages from the super.
You're lucky you weren't killed.
I got badly hurt. Right.
Oh, yeah. Broke up he was. Yeah.
I'm sure I knocked myself back out, but it was a mad
thing. We'll finish up with this story, right? I remember one night we were inside home and... Tommy, every time Tommy was out drinking, he'd always come in and wake up the whole house. I mean, he'd own the kitchen, he'd be making fucking sausages or eggs, or he'd be making a toasted sandwich. Yeah. And I said, grand, anyway. And you'd be dreading it because you're always waking up. So anyway, this night, anyway, the Lord and I was downstairs, and I said, what the fuck? It was a lovely evening. You know, it was a really, right, nice evening. And I said, what the fuck is your man up there downstairs? I said, what's he doing? Next day, he gets up, and there was always somewhere. Next day, he looks out the window, and there's a horse tied to the gate in the front of the house. And he says, oh, no. I goes down the stairs, your man is inside, buttering up a bit of bread, making his bread for the sandwich. I says, who owns the horse outside? He says, I do. I own it. I said, get the horse now, boy, and get the horse out, because you wouldn't know who owned the horse.
I know. Be trouble around the door for the horse.
You know, it was just crazy things horses like that. Horses
were a big thing for me. Like.
They were, weren't they?
If I had a drink, I was robbing the horse. Like.
Yeah.
They came together, yeah.
I want to give you the last last word. If there's anybody out there, Tommy, either in prison or out in the community now that's struggling and they think they'll never get it, have any advice or something that might give them a bit of motivation or something that might help them?
Yeah, there is help there. Because I was that person that's out there struggling now. I was exactly where they are. I thought there was nothing there. I thought no mum wanted to help me, no mum. No, I thought no one would do anything for me. But there is help there, you know. We are worth it, you know what I mean? We are worth it, our lives, because that's what's going to happen, James. We're going to die from it. At the end of the day, that's what happens. But, like, Table Lodge, you know, or not, sorry, not Table Lodge.
Francis Farm.
They are great supports, them, you know. And if you're using heavy drugs, you get onto them and they'll get you on a methadone course them tablets.
Suboxone.
Yeah, they'll get on you on them that you'll be able to get into the treatment centre.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think, James, that when they pick up their phone, they're going to treatment. There's a process, and I know it's very hard, but if you really want to stop, and you really have enough of it, you'll have to do all them processes. And
anyone can recover as well.
Anyone. Like my brother would tell you, I knew James, he saw me. I thought there was no hope for me, never mind saying anyone else thinking it was there for me.
For all of us up in Alcolan and Hollyhill,
yeah?
We were written off.
Written off in the world. There's help there, I'm living proof that there's plenty of help there.
Yeah.
And meetings, even if you are still using, get into the meeting. No, you can go into the meeting and use, but just stay in the background, don't open your mouth,
listen.
You know,
even doing that,
and I done that in addiction, James, would it benefited me when I came out of treatment, you know, because I heard the message in there and I heard people share, and I knew they were similar to me, so... Like, it's great foundation for when you get older treatment that you've been there already.
Yeah.
And it's easier. Yeah.
Do you want to close us, Timmy?
Yeah, Tommy, give us a song. Do you know?
Maybe.
No, but listen, Tommy, thanks. Thanks really for coming on. And I've been waiting for this day for a long, long time, you know. And John Paul, another time, come on and share his story. But thank you, you know. And It's a great pleasure to sit you there shining, you know, and doing so well in your life, you know, because I know everything about you. You know, I know where you've came from. I know how difficult things have been for you, you know, and I just want to say well done, you know. I love you.
I love you too, brother.
And, you know, my mother would be very proud of you.
Yeah.
You know, so well done.
The tree. I know. So listen, thanks for your time, Tommy.
Nice one, Jim.
And sure,
nice
thanks to everybody that listens and watches.
Mm-hmm.
And we see you all next week.
Slán.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.